Number one on the agenda today are the minutes from the July 15th meeting. Has anybody reviewed those? Any changes or any motions concerning the minutes?
I reviewed them. I'd move to approve the minutes from that last meeting.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Anybody else? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay. That's done. Next is the closeout of the 22 budget. Bob?
Yeah, so unless you have any questions, I only, because I thought somebody might notice why there's the word deleted attached to train the trainer, even though we held train the trainer. I'm not sure what that is. I have decided that since we have some carryover this year, I'm going to hire somebody that is a QuickBooks expert to come in and train Marilyn and I, because we're still not quite certain how everything works with the online version of QuickBooks, just so that we can clear things out. So if on the budget anywhere you see deleted, I'm not sure why it's deleted, because nothing's been deleted. So we ended on a high note. I'm getting ahead. I'll just say that we ended the year on a high note. Did well. We saved money on our conferences and just did well this year.
All right, appreciate it. 23 budget review. Bob.
Okay, so we received another year of grant funding that's going to cover a large portion of Ron's salary. Oh, by the way, Ron is traveling. He has a family obligation with an 8-year-old grandchild, for those of you that understand the implications with that. Marlise is training up at formerly known as Dixie, Utah Tech this morning, so she's not with us. Okay, didn't even think of that. But we did. We got another grant that's going to cover up to $80,000 of Ron's salary. It's going to really depend on how much work he actually does. It could be less. Last year it was about $67,000 is how much really, his salary that Ron spent on e-prosecutors. So my guess is it's going to be roughly about the same, but we've got funding up to $80,000. We had a non-lapsing carryover of $95,851.62, which is huge. And there's good things about that, and then it presents some challenges that we're going to talk about. And so if this trend continues, which CCJJ, the grant manager there, seems to think that we should be getting grant funds every year, that's going to free up, anywhere from that $60,000 to $80,000 in our budget that we would normally have paid Ron with. The challenge with, or the issue that the council, that we all have to face is we can't count on that every year. And so for some year we don't get it, then we have to make up Ron's salary somewhere. And even though we like $95,000 in a carryover, it presents a danger, because if we get, we were talking fiscal analysts before we, or at breakfast, and when we get a fiscal analyst that starts to look at our budget really closely, and it could be even the powers that be in the AG's office, that they're looking at the budget closely, see that we're carrying that much money over every year, that they're going to then say, well, we're giving you too much money, let's cut your budget. So that's the challenge. So I would rather only have, $15,000 to $20,000 carryover, maybe not even that much. But so that goes into this whole next section, of options that I've given the council of how can we fiscally responsibly spend at least this next year some of this money, and so that's really one of the big things I wanted to talk about today. Is what do you all think? And so just a quick review, and then we can talk about specific ones, is this isn't actually spending. This goes to the issue of how do we reduce our non-lapsing carryover. If we were to reduce the fees that we charge for our conferences, we might even say next year we're not going to, or this year we're not going to charge any registration fees. I mean, that would be, that would take a big chunk of that. Or if we were to reduce our conference fees. Historically, we started out conferences were free. Then they were $25, and they've incrementally gone up to $125 where they're at. The challenge with reducing our fees is that we have to get approval from the legislature to do that. In fact, I just got a call from our budget person in the AG's office yesterday wanting to know what we're going to do about fees, and I told him we'd be talking about it today. And so if we reduce them, but then we go back and raise them, I don't know if the legislature would give us any heartache over that, but I just hate monkeying with our, you know, with something that the legislature's already approved and is comfortable with. So that's the issue with fees. NDA conferences, we could continue to sponsor prosecutors. You know, if you've got folks in your offices or that you know that we want to take a look at NDA's list of conferences and start sponsoring some scholarships. Monday, I just got an email that I forwarded to you all about the domestic violence conference that's going to be the end of October. Because we've got lots of prosecutors across the state that are handling domestic violence cases, is we could send 10 or 20 to that and get a really good coverage from across the state. With the understanding is that, you know, they come back, they bring that expertise not only to your offices, but help out with future conferences, our domestic violence boot camp. But there's just some other conferences, NDAs, that we could look at, you know, again, if we think that is an appropriate way to spend those funds. Bringing in out-of-state speakers, this would eat up a huge amount of our budget, but that is something that we could do, is of speakers that we would like to bring in. We have some constraints that we usually typically will only pay like a federal honorarium, which is $650, unless it's gone up a little bit. But I imagine, and I only throw this out because I was thinking about Elizabeth Smart this morning. I mean, she charges, what, $10,000 or $15,000 as a speaking fee. I don't know if we could. And I'm not saying that her, I'm just saying somebody that would charge, you know, a big fee like that, if we felt it was worth it, could we get approval for that, Marilyn, do you think?
It's hard, especially when we have the federal fee.
Okay.
I'm not sure if we would have to go all the way up to finance, the Department of Finance, to get their approval, but it's kind of hard.
Okay.
Even when we've paid people $5,000 and $6,000 in the past, it was quite a ordeal.
Okay. And it's like I said, is bringing in out-of-state speakers, you know, when you're looking at this type of a carryover, you know, even a $1,000 speaking fee, you know, really is not a whole lot that's going to bring down, reduce that carryover. But again, I'm just brainstorming here. It's probably time that we seriously consider hiring a law clerk, because that can go from year to year. And so that would really be more of an internal thing for us. What that means is that we could reinstate our monthly case law update that we haven't done for quite some time. And it would help with Tyson and Marlise and I with research projects. And so that's probably where I would start. Let me then jump down to reimbursement of unusual expenses. This one maybe takes priority over the law clerk, because we have been managing without a law clerk for the last 4 years. So by statute, we are authorized to reimburse for unusual expenses related to the prosecution for violations of state law. For those of you that are new to the council and or new, you know, in the prosecution community, is since 2011, that's the last time that when I went back in Mark's old files that I could see that UPC made any kind of a reimbursement. And it was, what it covers is bringing in witnesses from out of state, getting expert witnesses, lab testing. I know for fentanyl cases, Orm City had to go to a lab back east several years ago. You know, these are the types of expenses that we're talking about.
There was one for a gun that was actually purchased for a prosecution. I'm thinking back to the original. I mean, I guess I've been here since 2006. So
yeah, I mean, so you can remember back when we were doing it. And so what I included at tab D was guidelines that the council had at that time for reimbursing, if this is something that we want to do this year. And again, you know, the beauty of the statute is it just says as funds are available. And so if for this year we decide that funds are available, then what I would encourage is that the council appoint a working group or an oversight group that would come up with some guidelines. We can go from what we had before, and then, you know, and then they could be the review group. And so the way that it worked is that I think not right, but probably around the first of the year, you know, because it's fiscal year, is Mark would send out a letter to all the eligible offices saying that we have these funds, we are now accepting applications for reimbursement. And that's the thing, is we're not paying you in advance, you have to have incurred these expenses and we will consider reimbursing you. And then they submit those expenses, and then they collect those over a couple of months, and then towards the end of the fiscal year, when we have a better idea of just how much funding is available, then that committee would make a determination on what awards to make. I noticed that Mark was only receiving applications from counties. And I was mentioning this to Marilyn, as the statute says state laws, and we've got, cities that are prosecuting state laws. And so I don't know if that was a decision that Mark made, that it was only gonna be reimbursement from counties, or if that was something the committee made. But if we move forward with this, I would encourage that one, our committee have city prosecutors on it that are prosecuting state cases. If you're just strictly in justice court, I don't know that those are the kind of expenses we wanna be reimbursing. But be looking at that. And then after the applications are accepted and we have know how much money we have, then they would make that reimbursement. So that's that, and that could take up a chunk of that, because the last one that Mark budgeted was $25,000. So that's a pretty good chunk of change. And that amount can fluctuate. Marilyn, do you recall? Was it a set 25, or would it go up and down?
It seemed like it was 25.
25 mm-hmm. is what he would try to budget mm-hmm. for.
Yeah, I think that was what was in the budget. And then when we get to the end of the year, because those awards weren't made until June.
Yeah.
And it would depend on how much money we still had in the budget.
Right. So Steve, you've been around long enough then. Do you recall, was it just strictly for counties?
I don't think it was just for counties. I think that at the time, they wanted something to be, it has to be an unusual expense, is what the statute says.
Right.
And so it's not just your simple witnesses, or even, I don't think it was even getting witnesses to try to your court, unless maybe someone had moved to Alaska or to another country, and it had to be unusual. So I think that's what they were leaning towards, and you just don't get too many unusual expenses in justice court.
Right, and maybe that's why it ended up
I could envision if in justice court you were trying a DUI case and you were challenging the Baker mm-hmm. rule and bringing in some experts on that, that could be an issue that, mm-hmm. that would be
right.
an right. unusual expense.
Right.
And then this is a reimbursement?
It is.
Right. Yes.
And you're not guaranteed to get anything. No, it's an after-the-fact situation.
Yeah.
And so really, I think most of the time it was smaller jurisdictions applying. The big ones absorbed into their budget most of the time. But I do think, as I recall, I think Salt Lake got one once. But it was...
Yeah. I'm sorry.
I know this predates you.
I'm here, but I'm only half here.
Yeah. You're fine. So,
yeah. What is... What
unusual expenses.
Yes. Yes, we did get that. Yeah.
Once. But it's been a long time.
I know Davis County, I saw, got one. And it had something to do with travel expenses, so... Okay, so again, for consideration, I'm just throwing all
of these
out.
For special witnesses, I think it was travel expenses for witnesses.
Yeah, that seems kind of been what it was, or like I could see is if you need some drug testing that a lab here in Utah doesn't have, mm-hmm. that's crucial to your case. Okay, so consider that, I'm just throwing all these out there, and then y'all can come back and talk about them. Again, this wouldn't be a huge expense. We could do a council retreat, sort of like what we did at College Drive a couple of years ago. We could take you off the Wasatch Front, get you away from your offices, do some leadership training. I've got agendas from other states that do those types of retreats. We could do something like that. Incentive awards. Again, thank you all. Last year, you awarded each member of the council a $5,000 incentive award. Just so you're aware, is that exceeded, was higher than what our counterparts in the AG's office would receive, and we recognize that, and I think you all did. I think Dan Burton was part of that conversation last year. But your budget is yours to, you know, spend how you feel appropriate. So there's that. And then pay increases. We talked about this November, I guess it's not quite a year ago. I think Ed Montgomery wanted to talk about this, and we appreciate Ed's support of us and what we do. I mean, I know you all feel that way, and he wanted some information about pay increases. And I think the discussion was, and I wasn't in that discussion, and so correct me if I'm wrong, was that, you know, the concern is if we don't have the same carryover every year, if you all award any kind of a pay increase, is that going to affect, you know, the training budget later on? And that's why you went with the incentive award the way that it was, and that's fine. And I'm not saying that we're going to get this grant funding every year that would justify a pay increase, but again, for your consideration. And so a tabby was the information that I prepared at the council's request last year. And so those are just suggestions that Meryl and I came up with as we were kind of brainstorming ways that we can fiscally spend this carryover that we've got, you know, and try to spend it down so that we're not having such a high carryover from year to year, so that our, you know, the important budget of training prosecutors goes away. Oh, I guess somehow, did I skip conferences? Yeah, okay, that would be another, I wonder if when I was doing NDA conferences, I was thinking I'd address conferences. Okay, so what's not on the agenda would just simply be, you know, if we had the time and the resources, we could add some additional conferences. I mean, we can't add a lot. Or if we did, we would probably need to maybe hire some additional staff, maybe a part-time secretary that could cover, you know, some additional conferences. But then that would be something else that we could consider. If they were major 3 or 4 day courses, we would definitely need some additional staff. But if it were, you know, 1 day specialty courses here and there, we could probably add that. So add that into the discussion. So that's kind of my overview of that. Unless you all have some additional ideas, is we're just looking to you all on how we can be fiscally responsible.
What, remind me how COLA works with you and your staff.
So, yeah, so it's, let's see, let me go over to that.
Does our budget increase when the state legislature does COLA? And so that's kind of outside of this discussion?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, so everybody got, all AG employees, of which we fall under that umbrella, got that 3.5% COLA of the funds that the AG's office received.
Okay. Did you tell them 3.5% is not enough?
It's my
inflation rate, right?
Yeah.
This month?
No, it's my understanding that the AG's office, you know, is really going to bat this year, and I think Dan has kind of hinted that there may be some success with that, but, you know, of course, I don't know that.
Right.
But, yeah, no, the AG's office, they're not bleeding, but you see all the, well, it's just like everybody. You know, all the openings that need to be filled.
Yeah.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think we voted as a group to give a bonus rather than a pay increase,
right,
because we didn't want to impose long-term obligations, not knowing
what
long-term.
Right.
And I think you guys all deserve all the money. Let me just start with that. Having said that, if we push for higher salaries, like, we're obligating ourselves in a way that we don't know that we're going to be flush.
Exactly.
Whereas if we fund a conference or decrease fees, we can respond. You can't unraise.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can, but that is very bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bad for morale.
Yes.
Right.
Bad for.
I think that's something that we always need to be looking at. But I wonder if there's a better forum than this full meeting to talk about salaries and an ongoing salary thing. I wonder, do we have an executive committee?
We don't. If you want to do that, I mean, because
If CCJJ tried to do that, it creates a whole other problem because you either have to have it not have any impact when the executive committee meets, or it has to be a public meeting, which is open to the public, and is noticed. And
yeah, that's
so
true.
Now, but what I put in here
we
is...
We fell in the trap.
Yeah, is if y'all want to talk money, and I didn't think that we would necessarily have time for that this morning, I talked with the Open Meetings Act expert at the AG's office, is you can go into closed meeting because, you know, the exceptions of talking about employee competency or whatever the buzzword is, you just have to close the meeting. You don't follow all the Open Meeting Act rules, but you can do that, and then, you know, just not make a decision or not finalize a decision in that, and then come back into open meeting and make that announcement. And so, you know, if you want to do that at a separate meeting.
Yeah, and we actually, that's what we did last time, when we decided on the bonus situation.
Yeah.
We did that in close. We talked about it in closed session, came back into open session, and made the decision.
Well, I guess, so let me just make some general statements. And I don't know, it doesn't sound like we need to make a decision on anything necessarily today, but I think the priorities of UPC has got to be staff first, because they're the ones that you guys implement all the missions, right? So all these other things, tweaks and things there, priority one is staff. And I would hope and expect that you as the executive director are looking at your staff and making sure that they're adequately compensated and bringing that to us,
mm-hmm.
When you think it's necessary. And then it's our job to do that for you.
Right.
I think we've struggled to have a formal or even really structured way of doing that over the last eight years.
As long as I've been here, yeah.
So I think it would be good to keep talking about that, figure out how we can have some structure into that. Now, outside of, so after that priority one, I think these other surplus funds, if we mm-hmm. want to call them that, I like those two ideas of the law clerk and then the unusual prosecution reimbursement.
Mm-hmm.
I really liked the letters, the case law updates.
Yeah.
I don't know how other people feel about those, but I think that is a bit more of a statewide benefit.
Mm-hmm.
The unusual prosecution is a statutory thing,
mm-hmm.
so I think that's definitely appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
But those are just my general thoughts.
I like the clerk situation.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
We do have the issues going on with the courts and with the defense table issues. We have used a clerk in the past to help with the maintaining the defense table.
Yeah.
And I it looks like there may be some opportunity to spend some time with the courts on their defense table and at some point get it all into one. There's no reason to have two offense tables. But the court, for some reason, and Mike wants to be there. Smart.
Well, and actually, we're gonna come back to SMOT when we talk about e-prosecutor, because Tyson and Ron and I and Lisa Ashman and I can't remember the other the clerk from
Jen.
Jen.
I don't remember.
So, well, I'll have a report on that.
But
yeah. Mm-hmm. So we will come back to SMOT when we talk e-prosecutor.
Rob had made a mention of something. He said it sounds like we don't need to make a decision on anything today. When do we need to make a decision? I mean, the fiscal analyst is going to look at this coming legislative session, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So do we need to authorize?
Well, I talked with our financial officer yesterday at the AG's office, and they're starting to work on our budget numbers for next year. I told them that I was down here. We're going to have council meeting, and so... we're going to meet next year to start the preliminary looking at our budget, and so we can budget in for a law clerk, and that will take, you know, $30,000 or $40,000 of that. So that'll take, you know, a third, maybe two thirds, not, yeah, a little third, a little over a third of that.
Another reason why I like the law clerk is because it's typically a law student, so it's
mm-hmm.
not, you're not anticipating ongoing staff.
Exactly.
It's really easy from year to year to say.
We can.
And the AG's office cleared up a cubicle right outside. You know, if you haven't been in our office space, we kind of have this corner. It's Marlise, Marilyn, a conference room, me, Tyson, and Ron, and they've given us the cubicle right would basically in the middle be the of hub that, of our yeah. our office, and so we have space now for a lot of work.
See, Rob always has a really good way of saying what I'm thinking, so I agree with him. The staff is the most important, that we need to consider that.
Mm-hmm.
Given the, as you put it, ripple effect that it
right.
has, but again, as you say, it's our budget. We need to consider that, and we need to do what we can to make sure that this is coming to you and you around and things like that. I also support, and that sounds like something that needs some, like Rob was saying, you reporting on how things are with the staff, and
mm-hmm.
then us, and then us kind of
right.
formulating something with you.
Right.
But I think us authorizing a law clerk, I support that too. Like everything that's already been said, but I think authorizing a law clerk would be a good
okay.
thing, and maybe even authorizing that at maybe starting the process of that $25,000 for the end,
right,
budget
right,
that for
right.
now. And how much do you think a law clerk, I mean, is going to take out of that surplus?
Oh, just an estimate. I should have looked before we came down. I don't think it's more. It would be more than $40,000 a year. That's if the, with them working full time during the summer, but I would have to go back and.
They were never full time. They were always part time.
No, but they worked full time in the summer.
Right, but that was, they kept their hours so that they kept their hours under that part time.
Okay.
Limit.
Yeah.
So we'd have to get benefits.
No, there was no benefits.
Right. Yeah, it's non benefited. Yeah, it was.
So when you were a law clerk, you just worked more hours in the summer because they were out of school, but during school. It was less hours, so we just kind of. If you looked at it over a year.
Do you know what you paid them hourly?
11, 12.
It
needs to be.
That was back then.
Mine would have been different. 17 years ago.
I'd say it's 20.
Yeah, if you paid them 20 an hour and you got 1,000 hours a year.
Yeah,
that's half time.
Yeah.
Essentially, 2,080 is full time.
Yeah, that's 20,000 plus.
That's how long it's been, because I remember the
yeah.
last time it was like $11, $12
an hour.
That's probably
1,000 hours a year.
Yeah, you're doing $20,000 there.
Right.
Well,
yeah.
they'll probably make you do whatever the AG's office is paying.
Right.
I think Steve Young got 15. I think he was the.
See, that's what I was saying.
Yeah.
The last one we had, I think it was right around 15.
Yeah.
So, and I don't know why I didn't think to look this up. Do you have your computer?
I do.
Can you get into QuickBooks and look back? And just see. So Marilyn will take a look. So,
well, can I just say also, you mentioned a part-time secretary if you have more conferences, but you've mentioned a part-time secretary even before that. So, like, I know the law clerk is important, but perhaps help,
mm-hmm.
secretarial help is
mm-hmm.
just as important maybe.
Yeah.
So we ought to not drop the ball on that. Whether you have more conferences or not, maybe
right.
it's a need for you.
Right. Sorry, I shouldn't have been eating while you're talking. Let me do this. We'll find out how much the law clerk was, and we'll proceed with that. We can look and see what a part-time secretary would be, and we could propose that. And then set aside the $25,000 for unusual expenses, and so that would be probably $45,000-$50,000 right there, which would leave us, you know, with about a $40,000 or so, you know, still to work with. And then I don't know if you then want to talk about incentive awards, you know, for the end of the year, or because I mean, I'm kind of with you, Will, is. Well, no, none of us would turn down a pay increase. It's just if those grant funds, you know, just don't come through every year. Yeah.
I know I'm not part of the committee, but as a citizen, can I ask a question?
Yeah.
Can you translate something for me? You have the part in here on your executive summary on compensation increase.
Uh-huh.
You said the legislature also provided $2 million more in discretionary compensation. And then you get into it. Any adjustment come from the council, therefore we did not receive an adjustment. Is there money out there
that
as a committee
talk about
that the committee is not using
that would be perhaps above the current budget. You know what I mean?
Because you gave us our
bonus. It just feels like this is money from outside and we're not addressing it.
Right, so the way that works is, Spence is here, thank you. Oh, welcome Spence, I just noticed. I met with Spence and I met with Craig Barlow, who we fall under the justice section in the AG's office, and they met with us and you know, just kind of explained how it was at, you know, told us about the COLA. And this language that I got, this is an email that Sean Reyes sent out to the entire office. And as Spence was explaining is the council has a little more discretion in salaries, because we are not tied to the AG pay scale. As you dig through the materials, as Tyson, Marlise, and I think even Ron and Marilyn, we make more than our peers with the same bar date in the office. And so because the council has been generous with us in that respect and is paying us more than that, they felt that 2 million discretionary funds that the AGs received, that they needed to devote that to, you know, actual attorney generals that are carrying a caseload that are getting paid less than us. So I understand the, you know, the rationale and the logic, and I'm not offended by that. But that's why, you know, I put in there is that the council, you know, has that discretion. All right. And so in answer to your question, Randall, if the council wanted to increase our pay, it would have to come from, you know, whatever budget we receive. You know, and so if you gave us $1 an hour raise, I don't know that would have a huge effect.
Sure.
You know, certainly a $5 or $10, you know, hour would be a big dramatic effect. But that's what that means. Does that answer your question? That was kind of
a
long explanation.
No, that's exactly it. And do we have the numbers of what those, I don't know, real AGs? Is that what they're trying to say?
Yeah, let me see. Well, okay, I don't think I gave it. In the tab E, what I pointed out is that, so for example, I've been practicing law for 30 years, and so I'm making about $3 to $6 more an hour than my peer. So if you look at what I was making back in November and subtract anywhere from $3 to $6 from that, that's what a 30-year bar license attorney would be making, and then the same with Tyson.
When you say peer, though, you're just talking about people that are practicing
a bar number,
practicing law the same number of years
in the office.
The AG's
pay scale is based on years' experience, not
right.
Anything special.
Right. Now, as I point out in here, so grade level 5 attorney, that's, you know, senior responsibility. Those positions are they're very few of those. So on paper, could I be a grade 5 attorney under the AG's pay scale? On paper, yes, but I'm not. And I've not pushed for that because, you know, they're limited and I want those for the actual assistant attorney generals. But again, my pay reflects that I'm basically making the equivalent of a grade 5 attorney. And so then with Tyson, you know, with 12 years, you know, you can see what Tyson's making back in November in Marlise. And so, Randall, that's, you kind of have to do the math backwards to see what that pay scale is, and I could get that updated. I mean, it's published on, you know, state HRO webpage. So I guess what I was going to say is if you all want to meet, have a separate meeting to talk about any incentive and or pay increases, we can schedule a meeting now, and then what I will have for you at that meeting is exactly what a law clerk would cost us, and I can give you an updated pay information. I can also have, you know, what a part-time secretary would cost us, and then if you want to have a discussion from that point.
Here's what I would like.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe this is a terrible idea, so don't, you won't offend me if you don't like it. I don't want to set up a subcommittee, but maybe we could have some volunteers that's less than a quorum meet with Bob to have a deep dive into the numbers and assist Bob in coming back with a specific recommendation about salaries.
So I now you did mention in the report here that the AG's office is currently doing an investigation into comparables among the community.
Right.
In Salt Lake,
right.
Because that, I think that they, along with most other government employees, are underpaid in the sense of salary.
Right.
Now, there are extra benefits that government attorneys have that others don't, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But I think compensation-wise, even though they may not have a pension, I think they have 401ks and things like that that are more than compensating with matches and things like that. Mm-hmm. So I think that this is going to result, it should result in the entire scale you're talking about being adjusted.
Could be.
Now, my question for you is, on that 3.5% COLA that the state just did that adjust the entire scale, or did that just result in a 3.5% raise for those who are employed? So did that adjust the entire scale for incoming new people as well,
mm-hmm.
or not? Do you know?
I don't. Spence,
normally it should,
and know the answer to that. I don't. I think that it should.
It's Spence. It did adjust for new people coming in.
Okay. So adjusted the entire scale.
Yeah.
That's correct. The entire scale moved up 3.5%.
Okay. Thanks, Spence. Anything else you want to chime in?
So the question I have.
I think you've said it well. I think there needs to be a deep dive into the numbers, Bob.
Yeah.
And the one other factor, and you've raised this, and you raised it offhandedly, but I think it's important. The further you get out of whack with other people in the office, it creates more of a morale issue for me.
Right. And yes. And not only for you, but for us, because you know, because we sense that as well, and we don't want to.
Well,
we appreciate our relationship with the AG's office, and we don't want to create, you know, those waves.
Sure. I just so you know, Spencer, in my office in Duchesne County, we support the AG's office in moving their scale up. I think we all need to do that. I've had that discussion already with my commissioners on my budget for next year, and we've already discussed how I'm going to support them in a tax increase in our county, a truth in taxation this next year, because ultimately we're going to have to do it. I can't hire an attorney that's been authorized since March, because we just don't.
I hear you, and I think all public employees, lawyers in particular, are underpaid. I mean, if we look at the private sector now, and you've got Kirkland and Ellis who just came to town, and they're offering $185,000 a year right out of the school to the bottom half of the BYU law class. So there's no competing with it any longer. But you made mention of the report that was done regarding other public lawyers, and the AG's office is significantly underpaid compared to legislative counsel and other counterparts around the state.
So
we're seeking to try to level that playing field. Whether we survive or not, I don't know.
And I was going to ask Spence, as Steve alluded to it, that I referred to in here, you know, that the deep dive, the comparison, so is that done or is that still being worked on?
That we are still working on.
Okay.
We have received some numbers back that we did the adjustment with the other money that we got. That was a market adjustment.
Right.
And we made some changes for the people who were most out of whack.
Right. So I think in answer to your question, Steve, you know, kind of going to what Rob is saying is if this group wants to start meeting, is maybe before an ultimate decision is made, as they wait and see what the results of that investigation are. Investigation seems like it's
review.
Yeah, review. Yeah, I like
inquiry.
That better. Inquiry.
Indictment.
So Spencer,
it would be parody study.
Yeah. Parody study. Yeah, I like that.
It would be nice if after you guys do get your study done. I don't necessarily want your AG numbers comparative, but I wouldn't mind having the other numbers you guys collect from the outside area on pay, so that we can justify to our citizens in Duchesne County as well why we're eventually going to have to do a tax increase. We haven't had a tax increase in over 20 years in Duchesne County as far as tax rate. So so it's time.
So I think we're back just to what Rob is suggesting is having just a couple of people meet.
I like that idea.
Bob, I just asked my commissioners for $30 an hour for law clerks to work special projects for me.
Did because, they give it to you?
They took it under advisement. They're going to give me some of it. They're going to give me that rate, that just the number of hours paid to be adjusted on how many I asked for. But because I want to be able to hire good
of
people.
Of course.
Right. You look at the rates that are going now for big firms, and if you want to compete, you're going to have to pay.
Mm-hmm. What are the what is the AG's office law clerks paid?
Spence, do you know?
Bob, we just raised them because we couldn't even get people to apply for the job, and I think they're in the $25 an hour range.
Okay. I mean, and that makes sense.
That was my first job out of law school.
Was it?
After law school.
Oh yeah. Okay. So,
are we ready for a motion? I'll make a motion. I move that we authorize a part-time law clerk at the same rate that the AG's office does for their law clerks for this year. That secondly, we authorize $25,000 for special prosecutions, and that Bob work on setting up a committee for how those funds are approved and expended. And third, we solicit some volunteers from the council to work on staff salary and come back with a recommendation.
Got a friendly adjustment, please, on the unusual expenses that be awarded in June. Subject to the availability of those funds.
So moved.
Thank you. Yeah.
Second.
Any more discussion on it? Or on these issues? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Okay. So volunteers, I don't want to put anybody in the spot, let me just email the council. I'll email you individually and just see and get some responses back that way. So do that.
I'm happy to be involved now in the pay issue things. I'm doing the same thing in my office. I had to adjust quite a few people.
Okay. All right. And if anybody else wants to, just let me know, and we'll get that information out.
I'm still trying to get into QuickBooks. It's just spinning. So.
Okay. It's now kind of a moot point. Is I was going to have you see what we're paying our law clerks, but with Spencer telling us it's $25 an hour, and that's probably enough to start. So it's 25 times, 1,000 hours, 11 or 1,200 hours, depending. So.
Well, I've just been waiting for that to come up. So.
Okay.
There's Garside thumbs nose at us.
Okay. So we'll do that, and then that will give us an idea of what we still have left in terms of that carryover, and then. Because I really want to get this done as quickly as possible, and so whether or not that means we all have another meeting. Well, we would normally not meet again until when, Marilyn? January. Yeah, but if we probably will want to have a special council meeting.
You guys going to be down at UAC?
I'll be at UAC.
Are you
coming down to UAC? Yeah, here in November.
November.
We'll be there.
Okay.
There.
So we could maybe do a virtual, for those that are here. If Randall, when we're getting to Randall in a minute, if he's on the council, he can pop down. But we could do a virtual meeting, so hey, we could plan something for that in November.
Okay.
Okay. Training committee. Ed, I know that you are the chair for the liaison, but we still have not had a training committee meeting. Is it all right with you if I give the training committee report? Whereas at our next council meeting, Ed will have been through a meeting, he will be fully up to speed, and he can take over that. But is that all right with you, Ed?
You bet.
Okay, thank you. Basic, we had a great course. As you can see from there, we had, just point out our student from Texas, Mo Alvari was his name. It was so fun. Tyson, do you want to tell him about just this little anecdote? I mean, just this sense of humor about how he ordered the same thing that Tyson ordered at dinner.
So we went to Indian restaurant, and um, I
server started with me, I made an order. And I think I ordered like chicken tikka masala with like garlic naan or something, you know.
And plain naan.
And
you
plain naan.
You had three elements to your order.
And I don't remember exactly what he said, but he goes, I'm going to have the same thing that he had, except for I want the pumpkin
curry
and just regular naan. And so we're all sitting there like, the same thing. You just ordered a completely different order than I ordered. But he said again, he was a fun guy. We actually tried recruiting him to come to Salt Lake. So we're working for you, Will. Kathy,
we're trying to. We still have positions. I think we're about to repost it so it gets to the top of the list.
It's constantly posted.
His wife actually just got accepted at medical school at the University of Utah. So that's why we're
That's cool.
Oh. Tell her to go there. Mm-hmm. We'll make a call for you to.
Yeah, really
good job here.
Right, really, really good guy.
He did a good job.
And so you can see the jurisdictions that were represented. It was a good, you know, cross section of the state. As I pointed out, we had several students, you know, that had gone back to school later in life, a former air traffic controller, and a stay-at-home mom who raised her family and is back in the workforce. And so it gave it just kind of a different feel. You know, we had three new faculty that have never taught a basic. Joseph Hood down here from Washington County, Alex Redmond from Utah County, and Dominique Katapas from Carbon County. They had gone through Train the Trainer this last March. Great, really great, fit well. And it just overall it was a really good course. Brittany Ivins, I bring this up. I don't know, have you met Brittany yet?
I talked with her.
Okay. And Ryan, you know, I've given her your name. Brittany, she was our Golden Kickball winner, for those of you that don't remember, just as a reminder. It's kind of the overall, we base it on participation, improvement, innovation. Not in my mind, I'm blank. We have basically five criteria that we look at all week long, and Brittany received our Golden Kickball trophy. Brittany's been out of law school less than a year, and she's a San Juan County attorney. Yeah, she's a local. She and her husband are locals. She was the deputy county attorney, but then I can't think of who it was that just took the bench down there.
Alex
Goble, thank you. So she is brand spanking new. So I just want the council to be aware of that, you know, reach out to her. You know, like I said, I gave her your names. I gave her Garrett Smith. In Morgan County, who's small, who's relatively new, but just as a council, you know, be mindful of her. Maybe reach out and encourage her, you know, to come to UAC. And is it Chris Allred? Is he the chair of UCBA?
Yes.
Okay, I'm gonna reach out.
Oh, well, is it no, Troy?
Troy. That's right.
Chris is Swamp.
Oh, that's right. Chris was in charge.
Chris running that party.
So I will reach out to Troy just, you know, to welcome her. But again, as a council, just be mindful that Brittany is just drowning.
If she has any issues with Indiana tribal laws, she's looking for
help. Oh, that's right. That's a good. I've forgotten that you guys deal with
does
that.
We're involved all
UAC.
The time.
She's probably going to come to UAC.
I don't know.
Jurisdictional
issues. I hope so.
I'll reach out to her too.
She had talked to me about coming to fall, but I haven't seen that she's registered, so I don't know that she's coming. So
I just registered this morning.
She has. I'm impressed with her. I think she's going to do great. Mm-hmm. You know, she's going to make all the same mistakes we all made.
Right. Right.
Brand new, right.
Right.
I think she's in a really tough situation because she was just working as a part-time deputy,
mm-hmm.
and then got appointed as the county attorney for some really circus-type political issues
yes.
that are going on in San Juan County, right? I think she's going to need a lot of support
from
us. So.
And I don't mean this in a negative, stereotypical way, but the reality is she's young, she's blonde, she's attractive. And everybody knows her, and she was telling me, I don't remember what her dad's name is, but she had a commissioner say, oh, you're Wayne's dad, or you're Wayne's daughter. And I said, if that happens, you said, no, I am the county attorney. You know, I may be all those things, but I am your county attorney, you know, and so she's just got some real challenges.
Their commission down there has been hiring their own attorney from out of state.
Yeah.
They've had some issues. Yeah.
She was able to fully carry on a Nerf gun fight while handling the phone
call. That is true. That was true.
I got all the faith in the world in her.
Yeah. Yeah.
Serious. She's on the phone.
Yeah, she was good. And then Alex Redmond is a former Marine JAG officer, and he was a sniper when we were doing Nerf gun. So we had a good time. For fall, let's see, what are we up to now, Marilyn? When I printed this last week, it was 68. I think we're up to 75.
76. Well, 77 okay. That I know of.
Okay. It'll be 100 by the end of the day.
I'm sure we'll have more.
Yeah. The training committee, well, actually, I'm kind of getting ahead of myself, so I won't come, I'll put off recording until we get there. If you recall, last year the legislature required that UPC and POST come up with asset forfeiture training. We finally got it done. I appreciate Bridget Romano and Melanie Mitchell from the DA's office putting that together, and so they will be presenting today that asset forfeiture training that is statutorily required if offices want to do asset forfeiture, and then we'll be working with POST to create similar training for POST. So that's kind of a highlight. We've got, you know, really good people on the agenda, but just wanted you to be aware because UPC has that statutory asset forfeiture training requirement. The training committee will be right back here in 3 weeks, 2 weeks.
4 weeks.
And so I don't know if anybody has any topics that you want to include on next year's training that you thought about and want to throw out. If not, I'm going to send out an email soliciting, but they will be here to plan next year's training. Okay, so just let us know if you've got any ideas. They'll also probably be tentatively, well, they don't plan OMPA and they don't plan UPAA, but I think they're a good group that can collect ideas. And so the same thing is if any of your support staff have ideas that they would want to see in a future UPA training, you can phone it through to us and we can do it through the training committee and get it back to the UPAA.
I want to have, this is my own personal, not for the whole crowd, I want to see a forensic genealogist. And Marilyn said, oh, I have feelers, I'll reach out.
Yeah.
But then she really didn't. But anyway, I think that would be so interesting because at our conference, so many people mentioned that. And if they could dumb it down so we would all understand, mm-hmm. I think it would be really...
I was going to take that to, or have you take that to NAPC, see if anybody
so
knew.
There's a SIAC, her name's Kathy. Anyway, she's on the cold case review board for the state. Anyway, there was a Salt Lake County one that they did forensic genealogy on that I was at a cold case review board meeting last week that he presented on it using, I can't remember his name.
Well, the Sherry Black case.
Yeah, that's the case. Yep.
So the Harry Black.
Sherry Black.
Sherry Black.
Sherry.
Oh, yeah.
I heard Jerry.
He presented on that case and it was fascinating. And apparently.
See, there you
so
go.
So it's run by like Steve O'Cam and Derek. Oh, it's not, anyway, there's a program or some grants that they got for actually advanced DNA. That would go into this forensic genealogy.
Right.
There's now grants that are out secured by the state. And
Sherry Black would be a really interesting case too.
So we had
Steve O'Camp
presentation on
and Derek
on
Coates.
That
was at
like
the conference last
year. Was it part of the Sherry Black case? Or, okay.
So he
preview
of this is what we have available, and then the detective who cracked the case.
Okay.
Okay.
Gave it, and I can't remember
his name. Well, I can ask
Steve. Awesome.
This would be really timely because there will be DNA tech legislation that's coming
here,
so the rules may change.
Look at me.
Yeah.
What
see,
are you going to do?
You are on the cutting edge.
Right there.
The bills didn't pass this last session, right? Like they were trying to limit our ability to use.
Right. Ellison's bill then and Hall's before that really would have eliminated. But there's a new effort this year to basically recreate Maryland's law for
I think there's another area that might be good, depending on what happens with the legislature, is looking at geofencing as a topic.
Well, as far as we know, it's just going to be a report, like track and report when you do it, which we can do that.
I have a very, I have a case right now that we wouldn't have solved without geofencing. Guy went in the middle of the night shooting people on the freeway, up and down the freeway, five different people shot at, and we would never have found him if not for geofencing. So it was a...
Sure.
And that seems to be going around. There's a Layton City officer who's done like 80 of them now and seems to be an expert. But anyway, that's another area that seems to be cool.
Great ideas.
Yeah.
So, like you said, in 2 weeks, two-ish weeks, is when they'll meet. And I'm going to send out a query, so if you think of anything else. Civil conference is the same week that the training committee meets. It's just the latter part of that week. I don't know if you all saw Darcy Goddard's email is leaving Salt Lake DA's office to go be a shareholder at Strong and Haney. I imagine that is your office in mourning still?
We are still in active grieving.
Yeah.
She will be doing government litigation work. So for those of you that work with Strong and Haney, she'll still be with you.
Right.
Liability issues.
Yeah. So she actually wanted to and was thinking that I would cast her aside as the MC sort of, you know, host for Civil. I said, absolutely not. You know, I've got too much between now and Civil. So she, even though she will have left Salt Lake by then, she's going to come down and this will be her final hurrah. So I don't know if we want to, you know, do something and to thank her, come up with some kind of a thank you. I can give her a UPC blanket.
We need to get a plaque for her wall. It's a quote from Troy Rawlings saying, "We'll kick your ass." From UAT down here. She was working with
the ACLU.
The ACLU, yeah. Talking about suing the counties on representation for indigent defendants.
Just before she came over to the DA.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Troy told her, "You sue us in Davis County. We'll kick your ass."
Okay, we'll kick your ass.
Will, not will. Like, we will, not Will Carlson. Yeah,
come on, Will.
I can't kick her ass.
Okay.
My fondest memory of Darcy. A little stunned by his comment.
Yes, I think we should get her some type of plaque or whatever you recommend.
We'll figure something out. I like that, though. Something has to kick your ass on. I think that maybe not on the plaque itself, but
maybe on the back.
Yeah, on the back. On the back.
Handwritten.
We could get Troy to write it. Okay, Oompa, the misdemeanor folks are in Kanab. Love Kanab. We were there last year, so we're looking forward to coming back. That committee, just for our civil folk or city folks, that agenda has really been finalized.
Pretty much, yeah.
Good conference. DV boot camp was not on the actual calendar. But Sandy Johnson approached Marlise and said, if I get the space, if I pay for it, all you need to do is, you know, do the registration and, you know, bring the people in. I'll sponsor it. So November 8th and 10th is going to be DV boot camp. And so it's primarily for Utah County prosecutors, but she's opening it up statewide. And so we will get that out. And so if you've got any new prosecutors in your offices that you want to go through that boot camp, that DV boot camp, that should be made available in Utah County. Because I think we're going to try and cap it at 25-ish, and she doesn't have that many that she wants to put through. I mean, I think she's got 6 or 8. So there should be plenty of spots open, you know, for other prosecutors to attend. We talked about UAC, November 16th and 18th.
It's actually, the date's wrong.
Oh.
It's Tuesday to Thursday. Closing ceremonies are on Thursday night this year.
Okay.
So it's
15th
and 17th.
So that would be the 15th to the 17th then?
Yeah.
Okay.
Middle of the week.
Wow. Yeah. I guess I want everybody to drive home on work day instead of drive home on Saturday.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And so speaking of which, I was just here last year. When do you all meet? When do the county attorneys meet? When do you do your dinner? Do you do that the night before?
We used to do it the day before, but if things have shifted by a day,
I think things are up in the air right now because I didn't notice that until this week.
And Troy sent an email out that he said he didn't see a necessity for that first day, that any meetings on that first day, Tuesday.
So we've been having that Wednesday SWAT board meeting.
That's when SWAT is tentatively planning to meet, is the first day.
A first of SWAT on the 15th. Because I'm just wondering, when do we want to then have this, you know, the next council, or I guess it would be the next council meeting. Do you want to do it? And I hate to say, let's go to dinner, because then that excludes people that are not here. Do we want to do a working lunch? We can maybe get this room, and we could do a working lunch and just, you know.
Have lunch brought in.
That's fine. We just need to coordinate with Chris.
Okay.
On what time. I'm not sure what time we're meeting that day. I don't recall from the other day.
But as far as the UAC schedule, it sounds like Tuesday is going
to
be.
Tuesday is the most open day. Yes.
Okay.
Wednesday and Thursday are full of meetings and trainings.
And so, is that when? Well, I guess.
At some point that day would be the.
Yeah, we would need to do it. So I guess is that then when Chris will have the full block of meetings? I'm just thinking because Marilyn, we usually reach out to the SWAP chair to help, you know, plan that agenda. So is that Tuesday that we should plan?
Yeah, so the main meetings I think are going to be Wednesday and Thursday.
Yeah, that you guys need to be in terms of, you know, the general county officials, correct?
Yeah, they haven't finalized it yet, but they're looking at SWAP on Tuesday.
Okay, so if you'll reach out to Chris Merlin,
okay,
and just let him know that, you know, we can help put the CLE together, the agenda, because SWAP is pretty good about deciding what topics they want to talk about.
Yeah.
Just let them know that, you know, if he needs any help from us.
We just put out the brochure and
set up
the CLE and everything.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Okay.
So, Jeff just sent out an email saying that we'll work with UCDAA and UPC to nail down time and location for the meeting. So.
Yeah, okay. Okay, then I put the new county attorney seminar that we have it scheduled right now for January 11th through the 13th with first floor of College Drive. As far as I can tell, there's only going to be three new county attorneys: Jeff Gray down in Utah County, Brittany Ivins in San Juan that we talked about, and then Kent Snyder. I think I said Kevin Snyder. Somebody asked. It's Kent Snyder and Daggett. So my question is, do we really want to hold a seminar for just three people? I've already sent Jeff and Brittany links to the videos from the last New County seminar, and I don't know that the presentations would really change that much. I can send those to Kent, or as we all know, there really is, you know, benefit to gathering and being together, and is three enough to gather and you know, maybe get a push to try to get as many of you to just drop by as often as you can. What would you like us to do?
So Jeff isn't inherently going to be at the executive in November, but the other two at least
probably should.
I'm wondering if it would just, as far as the networking contacting, mm-hmm, just encouraging Jeff to come in November.
Yeah. So they actually have a section for incoming electeds for meeting people and things like that at the conference.
Yeah.
So they should be
a whole other thing, just on the basis of meeting people.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think so too. And then we can ask them at that point if they really want to have that training in January or just want to rely on us and the previous recordings.
Yeah. I mean, because the recordings are good. Does anybody know if, Utah Association County, if they have updated, you know, that county attorney manual that we have provided? I don't know if it was Adam Troop that was doing it. Does anybody know?
Do you mean the county attorney manual or the government practice?
That's the one. Yeah, one that's spiral bound.
They've updated it within the last year.
Okay.
Maybe 2 years, but I think it's been only about a year.
Okay.
Matter of fact, it was a year because they gave it all out at UAC last year.
Okay.
And that's for me, as I started, that was really helpful when people are like, well, how do you, what are you doing with your budget, and how they want to change budget. I have no idea. I'll go check.
Okay. So if I understood what Will's saying, the tenor of the conversation is encourage these three folks to come to UAC to do the networking and then just watch the online videos in lieu of having three-day conference at College Drive.
I think that makes sense for them as much as it does for us.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, then that's what we'll do for that. I've given you the statistics. I turned these into the AG's office. It was time for the reporting, and so you can just, you can see how many conferences we had last year, how many we trained, what Tyson and Marlies trained. I mean, we had, you know, really good, in terms of training numbers, had a really great year. Okay, so then this leads into the discussion that I was sort of alluding to, is recording and or live feeding conferences. We had this discussion a year ago, or last year sometime, and the training committee had it, and the discussion was not to offer, other than spring conference, not to offer live feed, because we really want to get people in chairs. And we said that to achieve that end, we weren't going to record conferences. But I'm back, we probably need to talk about, unless you all want to do live feed, that would be an additional cost. We don't have the resources for that. We'd have to hire somebody to do a live feed every time. I really don't want to do that. But we have the equipment to record each of the conferences. And what you all decided last year is if we record a conference for then the 12 months after that conference, that they would still have, the person, if they wanted to watch it, they'd have to pay the registration fee, watch the video, submit self-study, and then they could get their CLE that way. And so I'm back wanting to know what y'all want to do. The fact that you now, because we've gone to a one-year reporting cycle, that's kind of shifted, I think, a need maybe to record a conference, because if, you know, your course schedule is such that you can't get to one of our conferences and you've got to get your 12 credits in, you know, and you want something that's current, you know, you want to watch, you probably want to watch a recording. Marilyn checked with the bar, and so post-COVID, what the rules are is you can do 6 credits. They call it,
it's just live versus recording.
On demand.
Oh, that's right, on demand.
They call it on demand.
Buzzword, yeah. So 6 credits can be on demand. So that's either a live feed or in person.
No, I think live feed counts as live.
No,
yeah, so that's on demand.
On demand is the recording. So if they go,
sorry,
it's the opposite of what you're thinking.
But they have a different buzzword for the live.
It's just live.
It's just live.
Oh, okay.
And a live feed versus in person is the same. Yeah. Is viewed
yes.
the same.
Okay. But on demand is if they go
except that online on the courts, on the bar's website, they have previously recorded CLE that counts as live feed because it monitors your attendance online. It monitors that you watched it.
Okay.
I had to do one.
Yeah, okay.
I reported this year.
Well, that's different from what she told me. On demand is when you go in and watch. What she explained to me was when you go in and watch it, or a recording, it becomes it's considered on demand, and it's self-study. So right. Was your self-study?
So that one, because it's offered on the bar's website, no, it counted as live. But then again, this year they said they didn't care about whether you had them live or not.
But with that,
but on their website, it advertises this it advertises that one as being the same as live.
Yeah.
Okay. It might. Are you still cycling out the 2 year cycle?
I did this year. This was my last. This was a 2 year.
So this
cycle.
Is your last year. So they're still cycling out the last ones that are on the 2 year cycle. So there's kind of
a
balance
website,
for the courts.
You go on their website and you can actually watch some of those. They are on demand, but they're from the court's website. They're a specific group. And they count as live feed, even though they're a pre-recorded CLE.
Well, I'm wondering if the caveat is, though, that they have a way to monitor, you know, your participation that you
did. Yeah, it at the bottom of your screen, it says what percentage you finished and that kind of thing. So that's, they sort of guarantee you watched it, or at least you had it open and listened to it.
So they call it a verified ECLE.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so, six of your hours must be live, which mm-hmm. means any combination of in-person, remote, live viewing, or a verified ECLE.
Right.
Okay. Okay.
So that's your option. And then everything else is self-study.
Yeah. So with the self-study on demand, is those would be videos from our conferences that people could watch. They have to submit their own CLE, self-study CLE. That wouldn't come through us.
It's easy, though.
Yeah.
I did it this year.
Yeah. And so I guess the question is do we want, and like I said, we have the capability. I'm going to record fall conference. We weren't going to, but we decided to at the last minute because Ron couldn't be here. But we have the equipment. Should we just start recording all of our conferences? But is that going to then reduce the number of seats we have? And what, so I guess it comes back to philosophically, what is our goal? Is our goal to train prosecutors? Well, are we training them via a video? Technically, yes. You know, we prefer to have them here, but by recording and making those available, are we still meeting our statutory obligation to train? Or do we want to have them in the seats and not record?
Well, for me, for example, so this year I had to report for 2 years, obviously 2 years of COVID. And I missed, we were part of the pilot program doing trials during COVID. I missed the spring conference from the year before because I had a verdict trial. Couldn't come. I actually just watched that one this summer to get my CLE in, but I watched the entire spring conference. It was a benefit to me to be able to do that, and I couldn't watch this year's spring conference. Yeah. I had to go back and watch the year before. Would it have been better for me to be able to watch this year's?
Yes, probably. I had a TikTok video that was amazing.
I know. Can you
pull that up again?
Yeah.
It was amazing.
My experience with...
I might have access to it.
The live feed is that I stay in my office at home and people interrupt me and I get doing work and I don't get trained, period. Now, some people, maybe they're disciplined enough that the live feed still is just as good. I kind of doubt it.
Yeah.
So like your question here, aren't we training them good enough by offering a live feed? My sense is no. I think the recording is good because someone can choose to go back later and look at it, and if they're gonna choose to just do that to check off their CLE, I guess. But I don't think that's gonna take people away from your in-person attendance that there might be recording later.
Yeah.
So
that's just
so
my sense.
Going back to the first one we did, it was probably spring 2020, wasn't mm-hmm. it? We did the live feed.
Yeah.
And for us in my office, it was actually really good.
You barbecued.
Yes, we did. Everybody came to our conference room. So we had five attorneys sitting in my conference room. I cooked for them. I went out and bought a new TV for our conference room. And put it up there, and everybody sat around the conference table, and we attended. We brought pulled pork one day, we had ribs one day. It was great. And we actually got a lot out of that conference.
So
I think it just depends on how the people are using it. But for us, that was a really good benefit for us.
Yeah.
I personally think that, not the live feed, but I think the recording of it is how we further our statutory duty to train prosecutors.
Yeah.
And I guess, you know, again, speaking as a non-member, when I've done the online ones, they've almost exclusively been because I've been shy one or two credits.
Right.
It's not as a replacement for an entire
6 to 8 or 10
credit training. So I guess that's the question I would have is if you did this, is your intention to put the whole conference on, or are you picking mm-hmm. and choosing here individual hours that you can do?
Well, that's the other question is, the more videos that we have, you know, it just costs us more to store. And again, you know, in terms of our overall surplus right now, that's negligible. But but we don't keep conferences that are really old. I mean, I think Ron, after 5 years, he'll leave the CLE and the ethics because that's the one that typically everybody needs to get, at least in the 2-year reporting cycle. But that is a discussion. Do we only record certain aspects of it, or do we record the full thing? It's just as easy for us to record the whole thing. I mean, you know, if we're set up, we're here, we might as well just record the whole conference.
Well, I don't have a problem with the recording only. Yeah. I'm just curious whether you put them on that way.
Oh,
you know,
yeah,
maybe,
yeah.
Maybe you have a discussion afterwards to say which ones would be most conducive to online learning. Because some are and some are not. It just depends on how it's run.
Yeah.
The more interactive it is, the less effective it's going to be
right.
online.
Well, that's why we would never film BASIC. That would not be one that we would film and post online. And maybe your question you're asking is, Ron breaks the conference up, so it's not like you have to watch, you know, 6 hours in a block. They're 60-minute blocks, so you do have the option of going in and watching. And I'd have to ask him to see if there's a way that we could track to see what types of topics and or which ones are watched and which ones are not, and that could guide us in the future.
It seems like recording spring and fall conference is a good idea to have for later training, but I'm not in favor. Like, if people set it up the right way, like you went to a live training.
Yeah.
Like you're off, you were at a live
training. For us, that's exactly what it was. We just sat in the other room and watched. That's what it was.
And for anybody else that's like me, that was just sitting in their own laptop by themselves, like, I didn't get much out of it.
Yeah.
But, and that's a personal discipline issue, right? But I don't know that I'm in favor of a live feed.
Yeah.
For me, a live feed really is only beneficial, in my opinion, for spring conference.
Yeah. Sure.
I don't think the other conference, because of the numerous breakout sessions of fall usually, and that it just doesn't lend itself to a live feed.
Yeah. Sure.
So I think really spring conference, where everybody's there for those really two big blocks, is really where it needs to happen if we do it.
Okay. Well, then that's. What we'll continue to do. I don't know that we need a motion for that.
That's all what we're already doing at this point?
Well, it's just we're going to just start filming the conferences and posting the videos and not live feed anything other than spring.
And I think we're already doing that.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. I should have moved this up. I don't know why I left it. As you all know, Robert Cosen resigned. We talked about this last time. So I was under the impression that Lisa Garner was the chair of UMAA, but it's actually Sean Guzman. And so I had reached out, and we had talked about Randall McCune. We appreciate him coming down as our nominee. UMA just has not had a chance to vote on that yet. They meet October 5th, and so I've talked with both Lisa and Sean and strongly encouraged that they consider Randall for a variety of reasons, one of which that he's down south. We don't really have our city prosecutors are along the Wasatch Front and up north, and we like to get representation from across the state. So we're still pending a vote on Randall. So if we meet at UAC, we should have a nominee by then. But we appreciate Randall coming as a concerned prosecutor. Okay, sorry, Stephen. I'm just kind of questioning you here.
So that was training committee report,
council
live fee, council membership, UPAA report.
We had a really great conference. We had more people attending than ever have attended. We were setting up tables at the last minute, which it was just fun and awesome. It was a conference where at the last minute everything had fallen apart, and yet everything came together, right?
Yeah, we had a couple presenters become unavailable, and then we were able to film them, and so.
And we did the we let out early for a day so you can go hike and then come back, and we had dinner and played a game with Mr. Church. And it was really great fun. Everybody had a really good time. I think it was so fun that we probably will consider doing that again.
It made the legislative update really lively.
Not that it always will be a legislative update, but and we had some really discussion about it, because will people come back? We don't know. But anyway, it turned out to be really fun. And we have a couple of openings that we're going to send out notice on, and we'll get people's resumes and then vote, right?
So the assistants in my office did enjoy the conference, just to let you know.
Good. Yeah, it was fun.
So,
Yeah.
Mine loved it. I sent all three of my assistants and they came back saying they wish they had it twice a year.
Well, nice. It's actually the only, well, not always for paralegals, but at least for your legal secretaries and whatever other support staff you have, it's the only option to go. And just to network and meet people from across the state, it really, really is. And then, on top of all that, our conferences are so good that at the end of the conference, they're talking about wanting to come back next year, which is totally cool.
Mm-hmm. We appreciate that. Next up, we have e-prosecutor discussion.
Okay, so we were awarded grant funding for 300 licenses. And so that sounds great, but in reality, is the 150 licenses that we currently have, they're not up for renewal yet. And so that grant funding is going to go unspent, which means it'll just go back. But, and I don't have a problem with that. I'm just grateful that we got the funding, because if you recall last year, we applied for funding for 150 licenses and it got turned down. And when I talked with the grant manager at DOJ and I explained what we wanted the funds for, she says, "We'll put that in your application." I'm thinking, I just read you from my application. You know, anyway, we got the funding. So we are working with JTI on how best to look at renewing our contract. It doesn't come up for renewal in 2 years, but we're starting to work on it now. But leasing the additional 150 licenses, because we've got, I wish Ron were here, I bet we've got 30-ish maybe agencies that are leasing their own licenses under the terms of our contract. Some are brand new jurisdictions, others are like, I think West Valley added a user that they're having to pay for. And so, we're trying to figure out, you know, in terms of the contract, how we can cover those licenses so that those jurisdictions no longer have to pay for that. And the plan is we want it to be on the same renewal year that our 5-year, that UPC's contract will be, so that West Valley, their contract doesn't renew in March, and South Jordan doesn't renew in January or in June, or, you know, that it's all on the same time. So even though we have the funds now, we're not going to make them available until January 1st. That's when that's going to start. But that'll be a huge benefit to those jurisdictions that want to get on e-prosecutor, as well as, like I said, are currently paying for it. So we're excited about that. And as I said, my grant manager at CCJJ feels certain that we'll continue to receive this kind of grant funding every year. And so, and when our entire contract comes up, then yes, we will need grant funding for 300 licenses. And because we received that now, I'm confident that we'll receive that going forward in the future.
Actually, no, my commission just did budget me some money for 93 additional licenses.
Okay. if you can hold off till January, or if you can lease them on a month-to-month basis and you want to lease them,
we can wait till January. We can't get one of them for a position I'm trying to hire.
Right. Yeah, but, so no. So come January, we're going to make those funds available.
Okay.
The e-filing. Ed has asked this, and Rob, several of you have asked Ryan, why can't we e-file? So just to remember, JTI technically has not actually been paid because we don't have e-filing. Okay, they're under the gun to get that done. What we found out, I'm getting ahead of myself. We got an email last week that they are ready to start testing the e-filing interface, and they wanted to find out from the court who certifies the e-filing process. And my response was, well, Salt Lake is doing it. Why is the left hand not talking to the right hand? And so, as I was alluding to earlier, on Monday, Tyson, I, Lisa Ashman, Ron, talked about it, and Salt Lake showed us their e-filing interface that's phenomenal. Tyson got off at that point, but it's incredible what you guys can do with e-filing. And what we discovered is that JTI had to contract with a third-party vendor that got the certification and created the e-filing interface. And so when we went back to Journal, we told our project manager, why don't you contact the project manager for Salt Lake so that you can talk to them to see how they got the e-filing interface. But after all was said and done is what Lisa was saying, is that they're actually, JTI may be moving away from this third-party vendor they got, and perhaps that's the conflict, is that they can't, JTI can't work with whoever it was, and so they're trying to, you know, work it on that end. But we're frustrated because it's all they can do it, but we can't. But they're ready to start testing our interface. So that's the good news. So that's the update on that. As far as the offense that Steven was talking about, the master offense tracking table, Tyson, do you want to just give a quick report on that?
Well, everybody knows what the issues are. They updated SMOT. They changed a lot of things to the penalty sections. The reason why they did that is because it's a lot easier to capture data doing it that way than if you do it under the normal charging sections that we would have in our master offense table. Michael Drexel at the AOC and I and Ron met, it's probably been a month and a half ago now. And we're going to get it all worked out. It's just going to take some time. We have a little prosecutor subgroup that's going to represent prosecutors' interests with that. SWAP kind of set that up. What we're trying to do is we're trying to create a system where we have, for lack of a better term, drafting rules. So like what legislative counsel uses when they draft legislation, they have drafting rules, right? So no matter what attorney drafts, they're all going to be similar, the same. So that every year when legislation changes and everybody's dealing with their own offense tables in all these different areas, it'll be predictable on how the shared master offense table is going to look. And Michael has agreed that they will get theirs done early and send it out to users to inspect before, rather than May 4th it goes live and then there's all these problems, right? And nobody's had a chance to look at it. So if you've ever looked at the shared master offense table online on the court's website, anybody ever gone there and looked at that? It actually says that this is done in conjunction with UPC and the Utah Prosecution Council has approved this list. That's all false. Ever talk to us. They've never talked to us. That's
the original offense table was done in conjunction with UPC way back in the day.
Yeah.
And we're talking 15, 20 years ago. That's when it was done with UPC.
And there are times where we've worked with them to get things changed on the SMOT because it was incorrect or whatever else. And Michael's like, I look at that and I realize that that's not true. We never reach with you guys. We don't work with you. We don't do any of that. And so the good news is we have a listening ear at the AOC now. That has not always been the case. Sometimes in the past, you've brought issues to the AOC and they've told you to pound sand and deal with it. You know, your problem, not ours, but we have a listening ear who's willing to work with us now. And so we'll get it all figured out, but it's going to probably be a slow turning boat. Because it's not just prosecutors working it out with the AOC. There are a lot of different people who utilize the SMOT, and everybody has to have a seat at the table, and that just slows things down.
Were you? Weren't at SWAP on Monday?
I was not.
I thought there was a really good discussion. Again, Rob saying the same things that I was thinking about separation of powers, and I think Mike, he seemed to get it, at least. I mean, he
was he at SWAP?
Yeah.
He came down on SWAP.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, he's gonna work with us.
Yeah.
And we're gonna get this figured out.
Yeah.
Eventually.
I have all the confidence in the world we'll get it worked out. It just is probably gonna take a little time.
If we can keep our
it is gonna be
sane between
them. Exactly. And if the AOC continues to tell us which statutes we can use to file charges, that's gonna be a problem.
Well, the issue is only going to compound when we start going to the property crime recodification next legislative session.
Well,
it's only going to snowball. So,
and that's the goal, is that we'll have an idea of what the SMOT's going to look like before the SMOT's ever published, because we're going to have these guidelines that will follow and everybody will be able to know. But
so that's the SMOT, because, you know, of course we want that to work seamlessly with the prosecutor. So that continues to be a work in process. So that's kind of where we're at then with the prosecutor. As long as we're talking, well, no, I'm just sticking with the agenda.
We'll get back, come back to it. Yeah, the resource prosecutor reports.
I've got a report in there. If you have questions, reach out to me.
John, our justice, just quickly, you can see we got twice the grant funding. I don't know where that came from. So that'll be good for our prosecutors to apply for that.
Yeah. Also, get your $10,000 off. Apply for your forgiveness now, since it's much easier to get. I think I just got mine forgiven. So
that's great.
Word of warning: if you get the John R. Justice, it does impact your months on public service loan forgiveness.
That's mine, man.
Let's talk about that. Remind me when we get back on Monday, because I should probably put that in when I send out my John R. Justice stuff.
Okay. Oh, like they don't count?
Yeah. Those John R. Justice pays those months. Those months will not count.
They counted mine.
So.
Some of it probably depends on how your loan provider counts it.
Yeah.
Right. Because every time I got the DRJ funding, they changed how they did it. Mm-hmm. It is a lump sum. Okay, we're going to cover 3 months. Okay. They just kept changing their mind.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, and Marlisa's report also is in there. Again, she's training this morning.
Right. Then we have reports from UPC appointees to state committees. Any reports?
Will, since you're here.
I'm on the legislative meeting, so I needed to attend, so I'm really just here right now. I am on the Criminal Code Evaluation Task Force, which is primarily tasked with the recodification effort. I will be forwarding out an email on the UPC listserv of what we expect the bill to be in the upcoming session. We want your feedback, but we want it now and not in December, so that we can actually get the changes in front of the legislature before the committee. So I will be sending that out this week. There will also be a change to the definition of habitable structure based on State v. Carter, which was an Iron County case where a house that was vacant was burned, and whether a vacant house that everybody knew was vacant qualified as a habitable structure. The change is a win and a loss. Our loss is that instead of saying a building, railway car, vehicle, boat, airplane, whatever it says in there, it will just say a structure. So it's a little more ambiguous there. But it's more clear on the other part, which is where it currently says is being used for living or meeting or conducting business. It will be if its apparent use is or is currently being used for living or meeting or conducting business. So
that works for us.
We lose some ground and gain some ground.
So it would make that vacant house a habitable structure.
Well, out for us, it's going to make all of those camp trailers in the Cedars habitable structures as well.
Right.
Because that's what they're camp house.
If they're a structure, that's right. Going to be the new
area. Question is it a structure?
Right. And the issue that's come up for our arson team in Salt Lake is, if somebody's living in their car, is a car a structure?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas before it said vehicle, now it just says structure. Mm-hmm. That'll be where the
price is. Do you have a structure on wheels?
Are you defining structure anywhere?
No, we're actually... So right now, the definition...
I'm just afraid they're going to go to the building code, which would not include cars.
You're correct.
It would include cars.
You can go to other states that have a definition of structure, but this... Like, we couldn't get everything that we wanted. We had to... This is stakeholders with prosecutors and defense attorneys, so...
Making sausage.
We're gaining on the habitable front and losing on the structure front. That's where... And the task force just voted to recommend that yesterday. We are also working on jail release agreement legislation, but that is not ready. We meet frequently, mm-hmm. and I appreciate you letting me continue to serve in that position, at least until we finish fixing the entire criminal code.
Yeah, I appreciate it. You can see the reports from the others. As we've gotten away from this, I'm going to try and include this. You know, like Will's on the council, so he'll be here, but I'll try to get reports. So you can see Matt Jansen's report from the Children's Justice Advisory Board. Steve Garside was previously a representative to the youth courts. I'm just wondering, those that are here or online, is anybody working with a youth court?
I am.
Are you? How involved are you?
I do a little bit of going in and training the kids,
mm-hmm.
and then... all cases that don't occur at the school, I approve to go in and I observe occasionally.
Okay. Okay. Are you involved on a statewide?
No.
Okay,
no,
just down
in
UF.
Okay.
Fair. So I guess the thing is, and I'll talk to Steve to see who, you know, what the requirements would be for that, if it needs to be someone who's more involved on a statewide system. But if anybody's interested in taking that over from Steve, we can do that. I reached out to Kevin Daniels. He said he would be interested in providing a report and then didn't send me anything. I got an email out of the blue from Matt Hansen, who is a bar commissioner, and the bar just assigned him to be a liaison between us and the bar. So I know Janice McConnis, who's on our training committee, was also working with the bar, but Matt is actually now a bar commissioner, and that's his assignment from the state bar. So,
did you know that was happening?
I did not.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So we just need to keep that in mind, and if we have any issues that we want to take to the bar, that Matt's there for us.
I like that. So that works.
Okay, that's it on number 11, Steve. Now we're down to other.
Other, just still she had asked for previous, you started to talk about, but then
I don't remember what it was.
It was about me and the task force.
Oh, yeah, that's what, we need to come back to that. Yeah.
Mischief managed.
Mischief managed, yeah, I like that. Okay.
That didn't come up.
Just so y'all know, under other, LEOJ, Vince Meister at Salt Lake is working with Post, and they're going to have a course November 7th through the 9th. I, for whatever reason, I could have swore that when I went through, it was just one day, so I was thinking that we were having 3 one-day courses. It's actually just a 1 3-day course, and it's only going to be open for 10 prosecutors. So it's going to be first come, first serve, but they're going to do another one in the spring. So if you've got anybody in your office that is interested in that, tell them that they, at 1201 second after the hour, they need to get on and sign up for that. Isn't that what you had to do, Tyson, when you went through?
I had to do it pretty quick, and they even put me on a provisional list.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
And got okay. Ready. Yeah. Okay, then the last two things, y'all decide where you want to do fall conference. So we need to decide for next year, but we're trying to go 2 years out. So I would like you to consider one where you want to be next year, but then in 2 years from now, so we can start working on contracts and getting locations.
Last year we were in Vernal, right?
Mm-hmm. And now we're south.
Where was the year before that?
Down here.
So we've been St. George, Vernal,
so
St. George.
Up north we've done
Logan,
Park City,
Vernal.
It's been off of the Wasatch Front. So,
yeah. I mean, going east, the problem is we can't get state rates in Moab this time of year.
I like Logan.
Logan's awesome.
Yeah, Logan's good. Logan's got a good facility to use.
Okay, and then 2 years from that, come back here. Do you want to, Bryce? We couldn't accommodate. We could.
Yeah, we could.
You think so?
We've done fall conference at Bryce.
We had 95 in.
Oh, that's true. So Bryce would be an option here. Preferences.
Fall. Don't you ask them to vote?
That's a civil conference.
Is that just civil that does that?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
They don't trust the criminal process.
we let OOMPA vote.
Yeah. I guess that's true.
I think people like that. I think they appreciate
they
being able
to say.
Put in location.
Well, we could do that. We could just make that part of a business meeting. It's just traditionally you all have decided that, but if you want to divest yourselves of that authority, I mean, that's fine too.
Let them have a say.
Let them have a say.
Sure.
Okay. All right.
They can pick between Bryce and Bryce for 2024.
Yeah. Okay.
Tyson's running that for me.
Okay. So our next meeting is November. It's going to be whatever that Tuesday is. We'll work that out. But then.
That's a special council meeting.
That's a special council meeting just to talk about those funds and people. So then the regularly scheduled council meeting in January. I should have put the date on here. When does the session start? Is it the 23rd?
Or maybe the week now. No, just the day.
Okay, okay, so the session starts on the 17th.
Yeah.
So we probably need to meet, let's see. I'm not available on Wednesday the 11th. What about either Thursday the 12th, Tuesday the 10th, Monday the 9th?
I could do Thursday because I'm flying out Friday. Going to Aruba.
On Friday the 13th?
Yes. So Thursday, January 12th? Okay.
Sure.
All right, I will. We'll look at the room. We'll tentatively plan at College Drive, as well as having a virtual option.
What day did you say?
Thursday, January 12th. I'll have to get with Swap and get with Jeff. I can't remember who's going to go first, but it'll basically be either Swap, us, then UCDA, or them, us. We'll work on the order. Okay. Thanks, everybody. Anything that we haven't covered? Any questions?
Sorry, I'm not feeling super.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's all right. I'm just going to step out for a second.
All right, cool.
Motion to adjourn.
Second?
All in favor?
Aye.
All right, we're done.